This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What's up, Straight Fire fam? It's me, Jason McIntyre. This is Straight Fire for Monday, July 19th. I want to welcome in all the listeners who have tuned in to my Saturday morning radio show on Fox Sports Radio for the last 6 years. This past Saturday was the final Saturday of the show. A bit of a melancholy weekend. It's weird. My wife kept saying, like, how does it feel? And leading up to it, I was like, it's no big deal. And then it happens, and then it felt weird. Because I haven't, you guys know me. I love work. I like talking about sports on any medium. So I don't voluntarily leave jobs unless it's for something else. In this case, I just felt like leaving a job. I know it's a little bit of a crazy time to do that, but 6 years was a great run. I celebrated by getting another tennis racket this past weekend so that I would now have two for the tournament coming up this weekend. And I know I've been hyping the hell out of my tennis skills. I've played a lot. I'm playing later today. I'm playing Tuesday at tune-up, and I may play Wednesday, just leading into the tournament. Want to be fresh and popping. But I lost in the semifinals in 2019. There was no tournament last year. I better win, but I don't want to put too much pressure on myself because you know what happens. The guys who are 4-0s are like, I'm just going to play down a level and dominate. And that's, you know, you really can't beat those guys. So that's what my new weekend will be. I'm playing in a tennis tournament this coming weekend. But overall, the weekend was great. I really didn't know where to start today's pod, you know, cause like, what's a big sports story? Like, Game 5 is, you know, a little stale at this point. We'll get into it a little bit. I could talk about USA-Canada soccer. You know, I'm sure people are hitting the fast-forward button. But I actually wanted to start a little... Listen, it's July. We can do whatever we want, right? I think I'm going to start with Space Jam. I don't know how many of you saw Space Jam. The audience that has kids, I'm sure, saw it. Just about everybody I know with a kid has seen Space Jam, and I ran into kids, you know, all weekend at, multiple basketball games we had. And then, you know, you just see kids out, with your kids. And I gotta say, it's so weird. The take that really annoys me from people is, why would I go see Space Jam 2? It got like a 30% on Rotten Tomatoes or whatever the number equivalent is. It got like a crap rating on Rotten Tomatoes. And I don't know how you guys feel, but why the hell would I ever base a movie off Rotten Tomatoes? Just or any website. Why would I do that? Okay? As a grown man, I know what I like. I know movies I'm into. End of Days, check. I'm definitely watching that. You know the movie Greenland? I'm sure you guys have never even heard of that. Rob G will tell us shortly if he's seen that. Greenland, probably nobody's interested in that. I watched that. End of Days. It wasn't great, but it was 90 minutes to 2 hours of just passing the time. I like those kind of movies, okay? I don't really care that Rotten Tomatoes hated Space Jam 2 or... seemingly everybody on my social media feeds are like, that movie's crap. It's awful. Like, I get it. If you don't like LeBron, automatically you're going to hate Space Jam 2. My quick dime store movie review is, and this is the truth, full of honesty, Rich Paul's not paying me. Yes, I do like LeBron. I fell asleep in the first 40 minutes of the movie. I woke up. And then I thought the final, 65 minutes was pretty good. You know, listen, I had a long Friday night. You know, we went out to dinner to kind of celebrate the end of the radio show. Then I woke up super early. And then, you know, we watched it Saturday. And I fell asleep. You know, the first 45-ish minutes were a little bit slow. But the basketball action was fine. But I'm not the target audience. The target audience is kids. I have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. And they absolutely loved it. They were super into it. And, you know, when I wake up and I'm like, wait, whose team? And they're like, AD's on, you know, and Dame, and, you know, they're really into it. And, you know, my son and daughter really, really like Space Jam. If you have kids, I would say under the age of 13, but I'm going to push it up to about 16 or 17. Because I do know some kids who have siblings that are older, and they told my kids, we all watched it. We loved it. Now, many of the dads I spoke with were like, listen, it's a kid's movie. And I'm going to keep it 100 with you guys. I don't even remember the original Space Jam. So I'm going to have to watch that. The kids really want to see it. Pretty a bad job by me, right? Not showing them the original Space Jam before the LeBron version. But I'm not going to sit here and be critical of acting on part of LeBron. Like, it was a sports movie, right? It had video games. It had a pretty cool father-son thing where LeBron wants to push his kid to play basketball and the kid wants to be into making video games. Like, listen, a lot of dads can relate to that. any dad who's into sports and wants their kid to play and succeed and have fun and make friends and have a good time. Like, we've been there. And your kids want to come home and play Fortnite. Or they want to play Roblox. Yeah, we've been there. So I could definitely relate. I'm sure other dads out there. Now, Rob G has a kid who, I think his kid's like 2 years old, okay? Nevertheless, Rob G, movie critic, what did you think of Space Jam?
It wasn't bad. Like, I don't understand why people were going out of their way to hate on the movie. If you go into it expecting a kid's movie, then it's exactly what you expected. If you go into it expecting anything else, that's your fault. I mean, like you said, the first half is slow, but the basketball, which is all anyone really cared about, that whole climax scene, that was fine. Like, that was great. Yeah. You know, the little things that they did to differentiate from the Monstars of the original, and now you got the Brow and the Dame Lillard thing that they did with him with his Dame Time, I thought was pretty cool. I thought that was very a nifty cool idea. And, just, you know, just to piggyback on your whole notion about the Rotten Tomatoes score and things like that. You know how I feel about the movie Last Vegas, how I think it is the greatest movie
gosh.
Of all time.
Yeah, we need to dedicate an entire podcast to that.
Okay.
That's your favorite movie, right?
Of all time.
I you know, it's funny, guys. You haven't met Rob G, but if you hear that his favorite movie is Last Vegas, I'm sure your next thought is, this guy must be an old soul. Meanwhile, he's like, what, a 32-year-old young Mexican guy?
Yes.
Who played football in high school? Yes. Like, very strange, Rob. I don't know how that's your favorite. Oh, wait a sec. Time out. Did you take your wife on like a date to see that movie? Is that where there's a connection?
Yeah. But I mean, we've seen a lot of movies together. But
was it early on in the relationship?
She knows how much I love that movie, so much so that she stopped like arguing about it. Like, if it's on, you know, we have all the HBO Max, things like that. So, but when we had cable, if it was on TV, I was going to watch it. And she's like, you already have 3 Blu-ray copies and a digital copy. Why do you need to watch it on
wait
TV?
Wait a minute. All right. Let's move on. People are going to be weirded out. You have 3 versions of it on Blu-ray?
I do. And one of them actually, my wife's cousin still has. Jeremy, if you're listening to this, which I know you are because you're listening to the show religiously, give me my damn Blu-ray back, dude.
Oh, my gosh.
I've been waiting for it. But anyway,
I don't even know if we have a Blu-ray player in our house.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What is that? What is
your kids are at that age where they probably don't even know what a Blu-ray is. Right?
Yeah, those are toast. They're done.
Yeah.
For kicks. And I know this is a sports podcast, but Space Jam 2 is a sports movie. I'm just going to point out, I know what kind of movies I like. I figured basketball, Space Jam, I'm going to check it out. The top grossing movies of 2019. I don't know what they got on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't give a damn. Number 1 was Avengers Endgame. I saw it. Number 2 was Lion King. I saw it. Number 3 was Frozen 2. I did not see that. Toy Story 4. I might have seen that and fallen asleep in the theater. 5 was Captain Marvel. Now, this is weird because I like all the Marvel movies. I don't know where you are on that, Rob. My kids didn't look that interested in it, and I did not look that interested in it. So we have not seen Captain Marvel. If you're listening to this and it's amazing, please ping me. Star Wars, Rise of the Skywalker, of course, saw it. Incredible. Spider-Man, Far From Home, have not seen it. I've heard good things. 8, Aladdin, of course, we saw that. 9, Joker, incredible. Like, really, really, really good. One of the best movies of 2019. Maybe the best. And then number 10 was It Chapter 2, which I haven't seen. I will, again, brutal honesty with you guys. I grew up loving horror movies. And this one movie kind of ruined horror movies for me. It's called The Strangers. I don't know if you guys have seen it. For whatever reason, that movie scared the bejeebies out of me. Is that even a word? Does anybody say that anymore? Scared the crap, crud, whatever. Bejeebies. I don't know. Whatever. So I think it was because we had moved out of New York City. And it's not scary watching a movie in New York City. You know, you have high-rise buildings, people everywhere. But we move out to the burbs. And I stumble upon Strangers one night. And it has Liv Tyler who, you know, Liv Tyler, if you grew up in the 90s, Liv Tyler was in those Aerosmith videos. Her dad, of course, Steven Tyler. You're like, oh, Liv Tyler's in it. I'm watching
awkward,
it.
By the way. Super awkward, by the way. I know, quick tangent. The fact that she was so sexualized in all of those music videos and that was her dad's song is kind of weird.
That's a little, somewhat creepy, yes. But if, again, was she with Alicia Silverstone?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So anything with Alicia Silverstone, I'm watching. Clueless. It's on. Been on a lot during the day recently when I'm working on stuff. I'm watching it. Clueless. Great movie. And so anyways, Liv Tyler's in The Strangers. And I start watching this. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. This is scary as hell. I had to turn it off. I was like, I'll watch this tomorrow during the day when, you know, it's light. I mean, the movie, listen, I don't scare easily. And Strangers is scary because it don't have a good ending. Like Purge, I was willing to go see all those Purge movies. That stuff doesn't scare me. This one just felt like something that could actually happen. Very strange. Okay, now we've gone way off the tangent. Let's get back to sports. Anyway, Rob G., if 5 stars is the best sports movie you've ever seen, be it Remember the Titans, Hoosiers, White Men Can't Jump, whatever you want your 5-star movie to be, that's it. And 1 is a garbage movie that you would not recommend. You will not watch it if it's on cable. You will go out, advocate, do not watch this movie. Where do you have Space Jam 2 on the 5-star movie scale?
As a 32-year-old male, I have it as a 3. Hmm. But if you're someone like yourself who has kids in that key demographic, yeah, that's like between 9 and 15, which is, I think this is exactly who that movie is made for, then it's probably like a 4.
Yeah. Yeah. Not for me, but yes, I can totally see how kids love it. And now we've done a lot on Space Jam. And I wish we could talk more about LeBron, but...
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Instead of talking about Game 5 real quick, can we go back to the Dame Lillard stuff that came out on Friday? So it was weird. Yeah. Henry Abbott, who came on this pod last month, and we talked about how much we liked Henry Abbott, right? Good interview. If you missed it, I mean, you got to listen to it. Here's why I believe Henry Abbott. And, of course, Damian Lillard tried to poo-poo it and say, oh, well, blah, blah, blah. He, like, talked around it without basically saying it's not true. Henry Abbott, of course, said that Damian Lillard in the coming days will demand a trade. I find it awkward that in the coming days means he's going to, like, do it from Tokyo, which I don't think he's going to do at the Olympics. That's in bad form, obviously. So I don't know about Henry's timetable. But a couple things. Henry Abbott basically has been, I don't know if the word investigating is too strong, but he has been reporting on owners, okay? He's talking to people at high levels. I'm of the belief this is well-sourced. He's not the kind of guy to just throw crap out there and hope it sticks. Dame demanding a trade would not surprise me. I don't know why it would surprise anyone else. They've lost in the first round 4 of the last 5 years. They just fired their coach. They got a new coach. Yes, I know Damian Lillard requested him. But this idea that he should stay in Portland because he said so 3 years ago. Guys, one of the first things I said on this podcast way, way back, maybe the first week, we are horrible at predicting the future. If I had told you 6 years ago, Jason, in 2021, you will be living in Southern California, about 7 blocks from the beach, and you will be doing a 5-day-a-week podcast, and you'll be on TV at FS1, and you will be writing stuff for Fox Sports, and you will be like the gambling guy for Fox Sports. If you had said that 6 years ago, you would have laughed at me. This guy is dreaming. Bro, you crazy. What are you doing, mushrooms today? What is it? You getting high on your own supply? What's going on, Jay? If that would have been the reaction. We're not good at predicting the future. We're just not. We're not good at it. It's extremely difficult. Why do you think the NFL draft is such an inexact science? NBA draft, a little more exact, but still very, very inexact. Okay? This idea that Damian Lillard said 4 years ago, I'm going to win one. You know, I'm staying with mine. I'm not going anywhere. Things change. People change. Priorities change. Teams change. Teammates change. There's no reason at all Damian Lillard should be held to. But he said this. Like, who cares? It doesn't friggin' matter. Wake up, people. This idea that Dame could look to the future 3 or 4 years ago and say, oh my gosh, Kevin Durant's going to the Warriors? And Kevin Durant's going to go to the Nets? And LeBron's going to the Lakers? Like, who saw any of this coming? Who saw Jokic going from a second-round pick to being an MVP of the league? Who saw everybody getting hurt in the 2021 playoffs and the Bucks and Giannis are going to luck box into a title? And all of a sudden, and this is where the Bucks tie in. Remember, last offseason, the Bucks got beaten down by the Heat in the bubble. And they came out and said, we are going all in. We got to keep Giannis in Milwaukee. We got to make a move. We're trading 3 first-round picks for Jrue Holiday. I mean, if you go back and listen, I probably snickered a little bit. I was like, and my favorite line was, they're banking on one-time All-Star Jrue Holiday to come in and make that much of a difference. And it was like, okay, he's a really good player. I'm not diminishing what Jrue Holiday's done or been. But this idea that he was going to swing their fortunes, a little bit silly. Yes, he's an upgrade from Eric Bledsoe, but it's a little bit silly. But Damian Lillard is sitting at home, having watched that. Oh, Bucks, best record, losing the conference finals. Best record, losing the second round. Not the best record anymore. And all of a sudden, they're going to the finals because they made one pivotal move. They got Jrue Holiday. I mean, yeah, there were ancillary moves. PJ Tucker is a nice one. Bobby Portis has worked out. More of it was dumping Bledsoe. That was just such a win. But if you're Dame watching this, oh my gosh, why can't Portland be one guy away? Who can we go out? Remember, Jrue Holiday just made one All-Star team before this year. You're telling me Portland can't go out and get one big game changer and put us right in the discussion? Why not us? If I'm Damian Lillard, I've got to be looking at my Portland GM and say, why can't we do this? Now, obviously, listen, I'm not saying Portland the last few years was as good as Milwaukee, but the Blazers did make a conference championship round. They did get smoked by the Warriors. They did have some good fortunes to get there. But what, the Bucks didn't have major good fortunes this postseason? I mean, come on. Like, if Kyrie doesn't get hurt and James Harden doesn't get hurt, like, who's winning that series, guys? Come on. Even against the friggin' Hawks, Trae Young's giving them the business. So, like, you got to, things got to break your way. But I really do believe Dame is sitting home. And remember, Jrue Holiday will be, along with Devin Booker and Chris Middleton, getting on a plane after the finals and heading to Tokyo. I wonder what that's going to be like. Jrue Holiday all of a sudden goes from, guy's a nice player, to, holy cow, he was a big difference in winning the championship. Like, that's going to happen. Now, let's spin it forward again to Tokyo. Damian Lillard is hanging out with Draymond Green, noted recruiter, as we talked about last week, Draymond Green. And then we had, Rob, I forgot who the guest was, came on this pod and talked about USA basketball practice. Oh, Joe Vardon. And what's Dame doing at USA basketball practice? Oh, Steve Kerr is shagging balls and feeding Dame Lillard. So you got Draymond, you got Steve Kerr, you got Dame Lillard. You got Golden State with 2 first-round picks, 2 lottery picks. You got their one from last year in James Wiseman, Andrew Wiggins. Listen, I know that some people will say that's a poo-poo platter, but shit, Laker fans. Come on, guys. I had plenty of Laker fans texting me. Kuz, Schroeder, Horton Tucker? Sign and trade for Schroeder? Come on! And I'm like, well, that only works if Dame says, I will only play for the Lakers. I don't know. Listen, I know Dame has really endeared himself in Portland. That would probably, I don't want to say wreck his legacy, but I don't know that he would be held in as high regard in Portland if that was his exit. As good as Anthony Davis was, nobody's considering him one of the best New Orleans players ever. It's like, he's like scratched out of the record books for his exit, you know? So, this Damian Lillard story is fascinating. Truth be told, to me, a little more fascinating than the finals. It also has hurt that I had the Suns in Game 5, which was a big fat loser. I still don't really know how the hell they lost that game, but nobody missed a shot, so there you go. But Rob G, as a realist Laker fan who loves to hashtag future Laker everybody, where are you on Dame Lillard?
Well, Jason, before I answer that question, let me just say, to go back to what you said about Game 5 and that loss you took with the Suns. America, he literally lost the shirt off his back in that game.
Oh, God.
As we're talking right now. As we're talking on the pod, Jason is not wearing a shirt because he lost to gambling.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
there's no way that Dame Lillard's going to end up with the Lakers. It'd be great if he could, but realistically, we just don't have the assets. And even if he did say, I'm only going to play for the Lakers, there are still a handful of teams will say, okay, then in that case, instead of giving you four first-round picks, we'll give you two. Instead of giving you our best young prospect, we'll give you one. Or our second-best prospect, whatever. But there's no way he's going to come to Los Angeles. I said this a few weeks ago on the pod when you were off, when Gavin and I were co-hosting. There are two teams that make the most sense, one of them being Golden State, the other one being Philadelphia. And it's funny that you brought up Henry Abbott, because we actually got him on The Odd Couple on Friday night after his story came out. And he told us that he's still, you know, dotting his I's and crossing his T's on this one. But he has multiple sources that have told him that there is one team in particular that if he were to force a trade, he has one particular team in mind. Now, as of Friday night, he didn't know what that team was, and that's why he was still vetting it out, and that's why we haven't seen that column come out yet. But I have a hard time imagining, even still, that the one team would be the Lakers.
Well, I mean, I guess you got to go through it. Like, Boston's got some guys who have been close, but it almost feels like they've regressed a little bit. I think they went to three straight Eastern Conference Finals, and I, given the injuries and the Kemba, like they feel like they're regressing. The one team that's won is the Warriors. I guess the major problem is what's up with Klay, right? And, you know, do you really want to do what Kevin Durant did? I don't know. I would have personally no problem with that. I mean, everybody wants to play for Kerr. Everybody wants to play with Curry. Now, you go to Philadelphia and you get them over the hump. You know, you're basically viewed as, like, the greatest athlete in Philadelphia sports history. You know, Iverson got him to the finals, and they love that guy. Barkley couldn't get him to the finals. Had to go to Phoenix for that, and they love Barkley. Philadelphia could make sense. Joel Embiid is just, I don't know, man. He just feels very territorial and, like, yeah, I don't know if that would work. So, Warriors, Celtics, Sixers make the most sense. I can't see him going to a team that's like mediocre to above average and like being that guy. Like, you can't, like, as good as it could be and fun in New York City, good for your brand coming off Space Jam and your rap album and all that. Like, Rob, come on. You go to the Knicks. Like, what are you, you're starting the season as like the sixth best team in the East?
Well, the only way that makes sense in New York is if he has some kind of backdoor wink wink deal in place to get Kawhi there too. And I don't see that going. I don't see Kawhi, after he moved heaven and earth to get to the Clippers, just giving all that up to go to the Knicks. I don't see that happening, especially a guy like Kawhi who, if it was up to him, would play like 30 games a year. And Thibodeau's like, nah, you're not only going to play all 82, but I'm going to play you 44 minutes a night. Like, that, I just don't see that working in New York. But that's the only way that makes sense, because they have room for two max guys. And but again, I don't see that working. I think it's good.
Before
it's
we quickly get to game five, let me hit ahead. You with this. And I just thought about it listening to you. Tougher to get out of the East or West next year?
East.
Bucks, Nets, Hawks are ascending. Sixers probably going to do something. Who am I missing? I mean, just that the Nets are the favorites. If you look at any gambling line, huh?
Boston's going to be better.
Yeah, hopefully. You look at the West, it's AD and LeBron, but they have been broken. Injured LeBron, injured AD, each of the last two of the last 3 years. Nuggets will be back, but Murray's hurt. Suns, we'll see what happens. I the postmortem on the Suns is just going to be brutal. Oh, my gosh. I don't know. Who else? Like, Utah? Clippers?
Kawhi's hurt.
So no Kawhi, you know. No Jamal Murray. So, yeah, I think Dame would make sense to stay in the West. Memphis is going to be good people, but, like, I don't know if they can make that leap yet.
But you know what's funny is I don't know if you can even say that about the West, because he got the Denver Nuggets without Jamal Murray altogether, and they still lost.
Well, that was Portland.
Yeah,
but you, he's not losing with Steph Curry to Denver without Jamal.
One thing that our good friend Chris Broussard, and we talked about it with him last week. He and I talked about it, was if he goes to Golden State, I think they're the best team, you know, he could go to realistically. If you were to narrow, because, you know, the Lakers don't really have the assets, so you kind of quash them out. But of the teams that have the pieces to make a move, Golden State, number one, has the most pieces. Number two, if he goes there, they're probably, if not top two, maybe top three finals odds, I think, with that roster coming back.
Yeah.
The difference, though, is if he goes to Philadelphia, he wouldn't have to take a backseat to anybody like Steph. He wouldn't have to really
Hold on. Joel Embiid battled Ben Simmons for the team for years, and officially it's his team. He's the guy. They love him in Philly. You think Dame can overtake him?
When you get to postseason time and you see that it's so guard-oriented and wing-oriented, that's where a guy like Dame Lillard would win over the hearts of Philadelphia fans.
My final thought on Dame. Oh, go ahead.
But I was just going to say, if he goes to Golden State, not only is he in Steph's shadow, but he has to completely change the way he plays. Not saying he can't, but he'd have to be playing off the ball. He'd be setting ball screens and things like that.
That was going
to
be my point.
That's not really his game. But if he goes to Philly, he doesn't have to change anything.
Well, wait a sec. Not really his game. Remember, what unlocked Curry was shifting to the Steve Kerr offense, installing Draymond Green. One of the things that Curry does that we've never seen a guard do is give up the ball and then move quickly and get into space and get buckets. When Dame Lillard gives up the ball, it's like, okay, guys, run offense. I'm going to take a break. And he just sits there. And then he's been criticized for this, but that's like the offense that Stotts was running. In Golden State, it's like Steph Curry's just always getting open. Always. And you know what's coming. They just dial up stuff for Curry. Can you imagine Damian Lillard in the Curry role? Listen, man, he could be the MVP of the league next year. He'd be friggin' electric. And you know Curry's like, hey, I made a lot of money. I'll definitely take a backseat if you're going to carry us for a while. We got to save some for the playoffs. Like, Curry took a backseat for Kevin Durant. Like, yeah, I think this makes a ton of sense. All right, let's quickly do a little on, I don't know, Rob. I don't have that much on game five, man. It's just disappointing. The Suns led the series 2-0. If you listen, though, to the pod after game two, I said I think they were in trouble. My first instinct watching game two was, man, these injuries, like, I feel like they're in trouble. And then I, you know, knew Bucks were going to win game three. That was the easiest. And game four, the Suns were covering for 47.5 minutes and then blew it. And I forgot about, the Suns are in trouble in game five and the Bucks beat them. This is absolutely bonkers. The stat of game five. Okay. Giannis, he was great. 32, that dunk at the end. 41 minutes, -7. Okay. That's how good the bench was. Bobby Portis and Connaughton were tremendous. Devin Booker, 40 points. They lose, he's +12. Basically, the second Devin Booker went off the court, and I think he only went off in the second quarter. I tried to look. I don't think he rested in the second half because that's what happened at the end of game four. They took Booker out because of the fouls early fourth, and then boom, Bucks start coming back, and they couldn't stop the momentum. So game five, Suns go up 16 in the first quarter. Booker rests in the second. Bucks right back in the game. I was stunned. This is an indictment of Chris Paul. Devin Booker's doing his job. He's being tremendous. D-Book, 40. 40 burger, +12, and they lose. Some idiot, well, that's a little harsh. Somebody after the game asked Devin Booker at the podium, you know, how bad do you feel for Chris Paul? Or some asinine comment like that. And Booker and Chris Paul are sitting there. They look at each other, and he's like, next question. I mean, I don't think people realize how good Booker's been. Since the Game 3 clunker, which we kind of knew was coming, D-Book was 3 of 14, 10 points. Game 4, 17 of 28, 42 points. Game 5, 42 minutes, 40 points. I mean, Booker's playing out of his mind. The problem is they don't have the offense to match the Bucks. because all of a sudden the Bucks stopped missing shots. Chris Middleton, the bane of my existence. Drew Holiday, who'd been awful in the series. And I was killing him. And listen, this is one of those, hey, that didn't age well. What do you mean it didn't age well? Drew Holiday was playing like manure in the first two games. Hell, I think even in game three he was bad. Let me check the game log on Drew Holiday, because remember, he was really struggling. And then, of course, game five, he's everywhere. Yeah, even in game four, Drew Holiday shot 20% from the field, 13 points. By far, his best, you could say the best game of his career, 27 points, 13 assists. The game-winning steal of Booker. The game-clinching alley-oop. I mean, it was crazy. And I jotted this down. They put the numbers out like, oh, when so-and-so is a primary defender. When Drew Holiday was the primary defender on Devin Booker, he shot 1 of 5. This is a game where Devin Booker barely missed any shots and was incredible. When Holiday was guarding him, Booker was 1 of 5. Now, when you flip it, the numbers are scary because the Suns, outside of Mikal Bridges, can't stop anybody. When Chris Paul was the primary defender, this is from ESPN Stats, Chris Paul was the primary defender, the Bucks shot 9 of 12. Basically, it's like, oh, we can make shots over Chris Paul. When it was Jay Crowder, who was brought in to be defense, who's got a history of being defense, the Bucks shot 10 of 12. When Mikal Bridges was the primary defender, okay, the Bucks only shot 4 of 14. So it's like Bridges can only guard one guy at a time. And he did a great job early on Middleton, and ultimately they just didn't have enough. And I feel gutted for Chris Paul. I mean, he hasn't played well. Is he tired? I don't know. I don't want to hear any bullshit about his injuries, okay? You can't play that up when you had 32 in game one and all of a sudden you're playing like garbage. I know this is going to sound weird, but because Rob made the point about like bigs. DeAndre Ayton has the quietest 20 and 10. I'm like, get him the ball more. Oh, wait. He got 12 shots. He scored 20 points. Booker, wait. Oh, they just can't stop anybody. That's basically what this has come down to. And their bench, Cam Johnson, really let him down. How are you minus 19 in 22 minutes? That's unbelievably bad. Chris Paul, really, I mean, he wasn't awful. You just look at the numbers, 21-11, great. But they weren't winning plays. Devin Booker had the late turnover. Man, just a gut-wrenching loss from the Suns. Rob G, is this series over?
It certainly feels that way. I mean, it's one thing, you know, because you know Giannis is going to eat. There's nothing that they can do on Phoenix's end to stop him. He is just a matchup nightmare for them. He's been one for them all season. The problem, though, is the roller coaster ride that is Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday is currently like at the top of the roller coaster. So you're waiting for them to have a bad game. And it's just, unfortunately, they've been able to sustain the last two or three games playing really, really well. And the only thing that I will push back on you, though, is with regards to Devin Booker. I tweeted out during game five that I didn't like what they were doing with Phoenix in that third quarter when he was really going off. Like every time down the court, it was him one-on-one or one-on-two or one-on-three. And he was scoring. He was making some incredible shots. Nothing to take away from that. But it reminded me so much of like the 2019 pre-Chris Paul Phoenix Suns. Where it's like, yeah, Devin Booker's great. He's scoring. But these are not winning plays. These are not winning basketball. If you're going to beat a good team, and even if I don't think Milwaukee's the best team, they are a very good team. You can't beat them playing 1-on-3, 1-on-4, 1-on-5. Like, you need somebody else who's going to go there with you and to take the load off. And it okay. got to a point late in that third quarter where the Milwaukee defenders were kind of sitting on his moves because they knew what was coming, because they knew he wasn't going to pass. And then by the time it got to the fourth quarter, it didn't look like he had much legs left until the very end of the game.
So, Rob, if I told you, you missed the game, right? You were at dinner with your girl. It was an anniversary. Rob, you're not going to believe this. The Suns shot 55% from the field. 68% from three. That's not a misprint. 13 of 19 from three. 68%. They shot 10 of 11 on free throws. They scored 119 points. And they lost. There's no way you're pinning that on Devin Booker.
I'm not meaning to pin it on him at all. What I'm trying to say, and maybe it's just not doing a good way of saying it, is that because they were not stopping Milwaukee on the other end at all, like it wasn't just Giannis versus Booker or Middleton versus Booker. It was Giannis, Middleton, and Drew.
Yeah.
They were all going off. And if that's the way that Milwaukee has it going, and even then you had Connaughton was making his shots, Bobby Portis was making his shots. So there was no way that Devin Booker all the time was going to be able to keep up with that. They needed somebody else to give him 3, 4, 5 possessions where he can take off and save some for later, but they weren't going to get their doors blown off in that moment, and they just didn't have anybody. So he had to kind of take it all on by himself, and by the time it got to the fourth quarter, the lead got pushed out to like 13, 14 points because there was no one other than him who was able to keep up that level of pace that Milwaukee had.
I was a big Pat Connaughton guy. You mentioned him making shots. Like, role players making shots on the road is just so gravy. This is a kid who was awesome at Notre Dame. Incredible athlete. Nearly beat that undefeated Karl Anthony Towns team by himself in the NCAA tournament. I mean, he didn't have like 40 or anything, but he was just everywhere in that game, defensively and offensively. Great game if you want to go look it up on YouTube, Notre Dame, Kentucky. I think it was 2015. Then he's a second-round pick. He has started. So he's been in the league 6 years. He was in Portland, now in Milwaukee. He started 16 games in his career. That's it. Making some good money, and he is having a hell of a series. Like, I thought the Suns' bench was a big advantage. Pat Connaughton has now outplayed Cameron Payne and Cameron Johnson. Cameron Johnson could still hang his hat on that incredible dunk, a poster of somebody. Was it P.J. Tucker?
Oh, yeah.
Might have been P.J. Tucker. But yeah. Connaughton has now scored in double figures in 3 of 5 games. He's averaging 11. He's shooting 50% from three. Bro, you're not losing the series when you got a guy off the bench hitting 60%, 50% from three. Great series for Connaughton. I'm just worried about the Suns. I can see a blowout happening. I can see them getting roasted, and Milwaukee's going to be litty on Tuesday night. But, boy, this is a long Monday podcast. I just had to get in some Space Jam early. So we got a pretty good week of guest ideas. I don't know if all of them will come through. I think we're going to start to venture into the NFL a little bit. NBA draft is on the horizon. And who knows? We'll see. We're going to be doing it all. Thanks for listening. And remember to like and subscribe the podcast on iTunes. Leave a comment if you want. I haven't asked you guys to do that in a while, but apparently it's good for our, whatever the iTunes algorithm is. So we'll talk to you tomorrow.